This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee. We've got the entire gang together this week from ESPN West Palm, Brian Rowitz, and catch him on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. He is Jonathan Hood. More coming up this weekend, but where we have to start almost a week ago, as prophesized by Jonathan Hood on this program, more Samoans are coming. And they showed up, certainly, on Friday night on SmackDown. Jacob Fatu showing up looking great, by the way, comes out looking like a star, which made us start to think here on GKW as they continue to add more characters into the Bloodline saga, which, by the way, does continue to feel like maybe Paul Heyman was right. He was only in the bottom of the third inning a couple of years.
Yeah.
As they continue to add characters to the Bloodline story. We seem very confident that this is going to be continuing 12 months from now. So in 1 year's time, 365 days, who is going to be the biggest star of the Bloodline story?
Now, it all depends on which Bloodline are we referring to. The original Bloodline or Bloodline 2.0?
Or Bloodline Wolfpack, yeah. Bloodline Hollywood, Bloodline Wolfpack, Bloodline...
The all-encompassing Bloodline.
The Bloodline LWO.
Yes. Yeah, there we go.
We're almost there.
Yeah, you know, it's hard not to say The Rock.
Yeah.
And here's why. As much as I'm enamored with Jacob Fatu, we knew more Polynesian wrestlers were coming. I've been saying this like a third base coach, waving you in, telling you more are coming. Here they come. Here they come. Here's Jacob Fatu coming from MLW. We knew he was going to be there, but because of the issues he's had, being in jail, like he can't travel internationally, and it just so happens that WWE's traveling a lot internationally lately. Yeah. But he was stateside, and he showed up on SmackDown. Even though Jacob Fatu is, I think, interesting to all of us, that he's part of the Bloodline, it starts and stops with The Rock still for me, unless more are coming.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing, yes, you have The Rock and he's a big part. I just feel like you talk about the 2.0 version. 2.0 Roman, I feel like he's going to be so different and so unique and so damn over that it's hard to say he's not going to be the one steering the ship.
Roman Reigns, I can't wait till, and again, it's going to be watered down because WWE will produce it, but whatever show exists 10 to 15 years from now, when they decide to do the documentary on Roman Reigns, I can't wait for that because this dude's career arc is so incredibly fascinating, being so over as the muscle for the Shield to the point where he's being shoved down our throats, being rejected, has to say sucker and succotash on television, on live television. He had to say suffer and succotash, goes away, comes back, has the Bloodline. We have Brian Rowitz asking every week, are we sick of Roman Reigns and the Bloodline? To now people are chanting every single week, we want Roman. Like, this guy's career is just one of the more fascinating in wrestling history. Roman, I think, is certainly on that list. I think, obviously, like you said, I mean, it's hard to look past The Rock because things were as good as things are right now. Are you tired of Roman? He hasn't been around, man.
Oh, my God.
He's always got it ready to go. Roman's always has it ready to go in his back pocket. It's good to know that Brian is answering the question of, are you tired of Roman right now? Is a no. Yeah. Maybe that's something we need to check in with every week at this point.
Oh, my God.
But so it is hard because as fascinating as the Bloodline is right now, it was at its height. It was at its peak when Dwayne was around. Sure. And as Triple H let us know this week when he appeared on the Pat McAfee show, The Rock isn't going to be cut off for the swears that he wants to say once Raw shows up on Netflix this January. So whenever Dwayne is going to be around for the push for WrestleMania and whatever the biggest match in biggest WrestleMania history is ever going to be, like it's still going to be The Rock, but everything just works with this Bloodline right now, whether it's Fatu, whether it's, whether it's the brothers alongside Solo Sikoa. And by the way, you know, who's probably doing the best work right now? Paul freaking Heyman, man. Yep. Like Heyman pleading with Punk, like the devastating look on his face when Solo told him before he went out to his match with Cody that Roman's not coming back, like him pleading with Punk to take him with him. Like, who's going to be the biggest star of the Bloodline story? I mean, it's long odds, but on the list, you have to put Paul Heyman.
You have to. Because you don't know which way he's going to go. Like, if he aligns with someone else, like, you have to – Heyman's up there. Like, he's third on the odds list, I feel like, the MVP voting behind
Rock and Roman. Babyface Paul Heyman? Could we see babyface Paul Heyman?
Right.
Like, ever since he came back with CM Punk and aligned himself – like, with when Punk aligned himself with Paul Heyman, like, that just automatically made Punk a heel. Because if Paul Heyman's around, that means if you're aligning yourself with Paul Heyman, that means you're a heel. So, like, Paul Heyman babyface turn, it's not something we've seen all that often in WWE.
Right, because if this is going down the path we think, which is this current bloodline of, you know, G.O.D., Solo, Fatu versus Roman, Usos, and someone else, Heyman's with Roman in them, and that makes him a face, right?
That is correct. But I think that it is interesting to find out exactly which way Paul Heyman's going to go. Yes, he's missing Roman, but he's appealing to... You know, and telling CM Punk, hey, you know, you got to get out of here because these guys are just stone cold killers. They're bloodthirsty. You got to get out of here. And so I just think that, you know, Paul Heyman, whichever way the wind blows, right, he's the damsel in distress in the middle of all of this. Who knows which way he's going to go? And that's what makes a story interesting.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're going to continue to add to this. I don't know if we're building to a War Games match. I don't know if we're building towards a Survivor Series match, but I know something is, obviously we're building towards something with presumably Roman and the Usos, and maybe Sammy is their fourth, going up against the four that they currently have in this Bloodline 2.0.
You know what I think is going to be interesting, and I'll just call my shot now. You mentioned that one added element that's needed along with Roman Reigns and the Usos. That missing element could be somebody from New Japan, or that could be Cody Rhodes.
Mm.
You just never know. Because Cody Rhodes is always willing to align with someone because he always needs allies. Like what's happening right now, it's Randy Orton, and it is Kevin Owens, and it's Cody Rhodes against this new bloodline. I think they're going to go around the loop, as a matter of fact. Don't be surprised if that's at Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
But you notice, though, here's what's so interesting about this. Cody needs allies. But what we saw in SmackDown is we saw the three of, I would say, the six best baby faces in the company all taken out on one show.
Right.
That's amazing. Like, it just shows you the impact of Fatu and this new bloodline. We've been waiting for this Bloodline 2.0 to really spring into action. Like, they talk a good game, but what can they really do? We saw it in Chicago on Friday.
It's funny because we heard the reports that obviously the Fatu, the legal stuff played into it, but it's like also they didn't want him to overshadow Solo. Has he already done that now?
Wait until you put a mic in his yap.
Right.
That's going to be
watch his promos.
Yeah, that's going to be the one that puts it over. And apparently Jacob Fatu already, like, his merch is already selling very quickly. Like, it's going very well for him. I mean, they may have a Bloodline Civil War. Like, they may have to have, like, a civil war over who the head of the table is of 2.0 before we actually get to fighting the other members of the Bloodline. Like, it could get very complicated very fast. I would be all the way out on Cody Rhodes aligning himself with Roman Reigns and the Usos. Like, and maybe it's just because, again, I saw the fantasy booking of Sammy coming in, and Sammy, you know, he's the honorary Us. He's going to be the honorary Us till he dies. Like, that, again, goes back, does a lot of to me, better storytelling than getting Cody involved. Plus, you can still distance the championship from this storyline. Go try to tell some good stories with Cody. Because if Cody continues to just be associated with the Bloodline, like, Cody needs to start standing on his own 2 feet.
Right.
Because right now, the way his championship reign has begun, and we knew this was going to happen because we discussed it at the time, just the lack of challengers awaiting for him on SmackDown once he finally defeated Roman. Like, Cody's at his best when he's going up against the Bloodline, therefore making this a part of the Bloodline, therefore, like, okay, Cody, you really finished your story, but your story was just a chapter in the Bloodline story.
Well, we talked about it ad nauseum on the show. I was saying that the only way that Cody Rhodes could win the World Heavyweight Championship, a Universal Championship, to beat Roman Reigns is he needed allies. How did he win the Universal Championship? He had allies. It's like what's happening right now with Randy Orton and with Kevin Owens. Mm-hmm. He needs people around him. What he doesn't need people is like Logan Paul and AJ Styles. But with this whole situation, he needs people. And by the way, when I say that Cody Rhodes could team up with like the original OG Bloodline, it's not with Solo and those guys, because those guys are killers.
Correct.
I love, but the other side of it though, Roman's gonna be a babyface when he comes back. Main event, Jey Uso's already a babyface. Now we're gonna see how that part of it works too. What does Jimmy Uso also think of this as well? This is why we're in the top of the fifth right now. There's a lot going on.
The weird thing is though, like I feel like they're making the title insignificant in this. I agree. I'm out on Cody. I would love Sammy to be the fourth. I think Jimmy goes there also. But what if it's Dwayne? What if it's babyface Dwayne? He turns on Roman, and that's how you set up that match. And Dwayne ends up with Bloodline 2.0.
Yeah, I just
want to know how healthy Rock is for this, right? I mean, how many more matches does he have left before he injures himself again?
But you can hide him in a War Games match. Like, he's the last guy in, and he just does a few minutes once he gets in there.
So he's the last man in before they ring the bell.
He did a lot of bouncing in the cage. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, he injures himself making movies. So,
yeah, because that's the thing. Like, he looked really, I mean, they hit him as well as they could, and he still looked good in the tag team match on night one of WrestleMania. So there are ways. I'm hoping, I mean, ideally you could get three out of Dwayne, right? So ideally you can get three out of Dwayne. But him participating in whatever this blow off or whatever this culmination of Bloodline 2.0 versus Bloodline OGs, Roman versus Rock and Cody versus Rock. Like those are the three matches that hopefully, ideally, in kind of a retirement tour for Dwayne, we can get. That's what I'm hoping for. It's maybe a bit of a stretch, especially given, you know, that he's back and making movies and doing things like that. But if he can carve out the time and you can do something around Survivor Series, do something at Royal Rumble, and then do something at Mania, I think that's the 6 month stretch that you would like to have him, and then he can be sent off and have that retirement stretch.
Is it an issue for them that, like, as we look at this, and I think we're all sort of in agreement that, like, Roman and Rock are the stars? Like, the fact that it's not Solo, it's not Jay, like, I guess we'll see on Fatu, but is that an issue for them?
I don't think so. I mean, but that's how you turn pages of a story, right, Brian?
Sure.
I mean, like Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu and the Guerrillas of Destiny have to be able to get into the WWE system. Like, we as wrestling fans know who he is on, because we've seen New Japan, we've seen them, you know, but I just think that this is why this is all a slow cook. I mean, Rock and Roman are number one and two in all of this. And then there's main event Jey Uso, and then Jimmy Uso's way down here whenever he comes back. And by the way, Hikuleo is going to be a free agent. There's going to be another Polynesian wrestler. He's coming. You have Nia Jax in the company. It'll just keep coming until it just grows into something pretty big here. But again, Heyman will be in the middle of all of this, which I think is fascinating.
I don't think it's a problem, Brian, just because, like, you're never going to be a bigger star than The Rock.
Right.
Like, that's just like there's just nothing you can do. Like, Jacob Fatu is awesome, and I'm very excited for him, but you're not The Rock.
Right.
That's just not how that works. And if The Rock is going to be around, because The Rock is one of the biggest stars in the world, full stop. Right. Like, so it's just tough if he decides to be a part of it. And then Roman, because of the legacy, because of being the champion for as long as he was, like, you have to give them a little bit of time to continue to build these guys up. I think they've done with the addition and just making them seem so dangerous, this version of the Bloodline, they've done a good job of starting the build for these guys, but it's, you can't make them into megastars overnight.
Yeah, that's fair. And they have announced for Money in the Bank, it will be a six man. I don't know, I guess what three will face Cody, Orton, and KO. And I guess we're going Cody Solo at SummerSlam. The big spot for Solo.
This is where they're planning to, but here's the thing about this. It's one thing for Solo to be menacing in vignettes or in interviews. He's got to get some wins here. Like, yeah. At this point in time, I know the question's coming. You might as well start writing it now. The percentage of chance that Solo can beat Cody Rhodes at SummerSlam, it would be zero.
Right.
Because he doesn't win enough matches. It's one thing to be dangerous, but you've got to be able to win some key matches. Be like, boy, they're building on something. Oh, look at these guys. But here's what I like so far, though. They've already told you from Corey Graves and from Bad News Barrett, they're telling you, like, when the Gorilla of Destiny, when they came, like, all these guys, they're taboo. They're not supposed to be in WWE. They did the same thing for Jacob Fatu, to the point where they said, Fatu's so dangerous, they're not sure if he can stay in this bloodline because he was ousted away from the family. If you remember that story,
yeah.
They said he's not even supposed to be in this family. And then, of course, when they embraced, Fatu did not hug back. It's bizarre, man. It's bizarre. But I love it because there's a story there. Fatu so dangerous, even the family surprised he showed up.
That'll be fun.
It's good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's fun. A lot of other things to dive into in the world of professional wrestling. We like to call it the three count here on GKW. What do we have at number one this week, Brian?
Last night, AEW Dynamite, a big night for Daniel Garcia making the homecoming in Buffalo. MJF challenged him for All In. Ospreay challenges him for Chicago's Dynamite for the international and possibly world title. What is the ceiling for Daniel Garcia?
Right now, I think the ceiling is, I think he could be international champion and kind of be one of those workhorse champions the way that Orange Cassidy was. I don't see him as a world champion right now. And that if they want him to be a world champion, they have to do more work with him. Like, his promo was great last night, but how many times have we seen one great promo from somebody in AEW in friendly territory? So he's fired up because he's in his hometown of Buffalo.
And he's not in the front row. I don't know if you know.
And then it kind of flattens out, right? Like, we've seen this a lot in AEW where somebody gets hot, they're feeling their home crowd, the home crowd loves them. Like, it's a consistency thing to me for Daniel Garcia, and they have to, we know the dude can go in the ring. It's about building that personality past, oh, here's a guy who puts his fists in the air and thrusts his hips. Like, that's his personality right now. That's his character. So they have to come up with something a little bit better if they want to make me believe that he could be a world champion.
Could you guys explain to me what that segment was with MJF and Daniel Garcia? No, I need to explain it to me.
It was just him being a pawn in the Ospreay and MJF story.
But would MJF offer Daniel Garcia a match at All In mm-hmm. Wembley, right?
Yep.
So now is that taken off the table because yes. Now we're going to get Ospreay and Daniel Garcia?
Correct. I think MJF walking out at the end the way he did was signifying that that's off the table because, hey, you got to focus on the big match that you've got coming up a week from now. We can maybe talk later, but you've got to figure out that match first.
Did you think MJF was pissed? Because of that, I couldn't read that. He just kind of walked out. I don't understand what happened.
So one of the announcers made that comment, like, oh, like, he seems upset that he's being upstaged by Ospreay right now. So literally, it's just a pawn in the piece, in the story.
So that way we get Ospreay MJF at Wembley? Okay. All right. okay. I just thought there was a lot of moving pieces there, and it's kind of like, so where is this going? Because ultimately, I just need a bottom line. So in Chicago at AEW Dynamite, we're going to get Ospreay, Daniel Garcia.
Yes.
For the international, possibly world championship.
Okay. So for the international championship. as far as I can tell, right? I don't know. Well, to answer the question, I think that he'll never be world heavyweight champion. And I will just say this. If this was WWE, it'd be a hell of a documentary. Of all the shit that he ate for a year plus in this company, losing to everybody. It's funny, he lost a lot, but didn't get anybody over, or no one's pushed on the other side of it. Like, you think, well, you beat somebody down in Garcia. Okay, so that you're going to elevate someone. It just didn't work. So to me, I see him as international champion. I don't ever see him as world champion because he still has the stink of last year on him to me. He does. I don't care that he wears a leather jacket. They have not shined him up enough. A
lot of leather jackets last night in AEW, yeah. By the way.
Yes, on a hot night in Buffalo, by the way, because that's the right time. I mean, on 100 degrees, yeah, wear leather. So
it was cold inside.
When you're not wearing a shirt under the jacket, it's fine.
Right, it's crazy.
You're cool.
That's two Americas there. But nonetheless, I don't understand that. Yeah, the only thing cold in that arena was the attendance. Third full Buffalo for Daniel Garcia. So that shows how cold he is that he can't fill up that arena. But I would say international champion, I don't see him as world champion in this company.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned WWE because it's interesting where him as that sort of scrappy underdog taking losses forever doesn't work in AEW because there are plenty of guys that look and act like Daniel Garcia. Like, what makes him different than half the roster that's competing for world titles? Like, Daniel Bryan worked because he doesn't look like Batista. He doesn't look like Triple H. He doesn't look like Orton. Daniel Garcia, he sort of looks like Ospreay. Like, you could see him sort of looking like Swerve. And I think that's why he doesn't stand out. And there isn't that one thing right now with him where you're like, all right, I want to see him push to the moon.
Yeah, again, he's like a lot of other guys on AEW's roster. We know he can go in the ring. We know he can put on a really great match. It's now making me care past, oh, he's going to put his fists in the air and thrust his hips in your direction. Like, that's like, no, I need more. Like, I need more out of if you want to. And look, again, that can get you as high as the international championship. You can be a guy that then is a workhorse with that championship, which, again, isn't quite as high to me as even the TNT championship, which I don't think is attainable necessarily for Daniel Garcia. So I just he's a good piece to have in that company. But even though he was featured with quite possibly their two best in that, he was, like you said, Brian, he was just a pawn in what they were trying to hopefully further some sort of MJF story with Will Ospreay.
Gabe, let Grandpa talk to you a little bit about wrestling the way it used to be. Let's talk about it.
All right.
Grandpa Hoodie's going to tell you that.
You need to go get a blanket and get all cozy?
Yes, please. And please put on the fire, please. I got a log on the fire for you. Oh, this will be brief. I just want to say that back in the day, in the territory days, Daniel Garcia would not have been in a company for 5 years. See, this is what's happened to these guys. Like, we feel, we haven't said it yet, but Daniel Garcia is stale in AEW. He's stale. And that's because he's aligned with Jericho and he's lost a lot of matches. In the territory days, he would have been there for a couple years. Kid, hey, Jim Crockett's calling. Go to Carolina. Hey, go to Oregon. You know, work in Portland. Hey, go to Puerto Rico. You know, just sharpen your skills and then come back. Now you come back as a star. But you hang around for 5 years. You're one of the originals. Yeah, you lose a lot of matches. You win some, you lose some. You don't really have a strong title reign. You're an ROH behind a paywall. No one sees you there. You didn't win some match. I mean, so to me, this is where the territory system was good, where you say, I'm going to be here for 2 years, and I'll go someplace else, apply my craft, work on myself, and then come back to AEW. He's just like a lot of wrestlers, WWE also, and AEW. You stay too long, people just take you for granted.
But that's why they should almost use ROH more to their advantage. Like, let him get a run with the world title, but don't let us see it. Like, if you want to see him, you pay for, you know, Honor Club, and that's it. The thing with him is I feel like when we were most entertained by him was the Jericho Danielson back and forth, the, like, pro wrestler, sports entertainer. I don't truthfully remember how it ended, but wouldn't it have been different if he went the BCC route and, like, he was almost Yuta for the last year.
Yeah, oh yeah, I think he would be different. Like, he would have a different personality because then he was with JAS. He was another rand in the JAS, right. Which is, and by the way, it's crazy to think right now that after the Jericho Appreciation Society, right now the most over and the one has done the best for his career is our guy Daddy Magic, because he's now permanently on the Rampage commentary team and doing a tremendous job, by the way.
Of course.
Because, like, Sammy Guevara is nowhere to be seen. Jake Hager's out of the company. Cool Hand Ange. I mean, he had the storyline certainly, but now he's off because, you know, they're getting ready. They just got married.
He's got a kid.
Now they've got a kid. So, you know, they're figuring that whole thing out. So, like, of the Jericho Appreciation Society, like, Daddy Magic Matt Menard is the one who has, like, actually used that to springboard his career forward. Where, again, Garcia's just kind of been spinning his wheels ever since he ended up with Jericho instead of Danielson.
Yeah, it's so weird. And they're trying, like the Continental Classic. Like he was in that. He had some good matches there.
But he lost, and right, until he the lost end, like he got like the win at the end that helped jumble everything in the Continental Classic. But
well, the way you lay that out, Gabe, you know what that sounds like? Sounds like the Learning Tree gimmick is actually a shoot. I'm just here for the young guys, wink, but not really.
Well, so that was a shot at Cody Rhodes. Because I don't know if you saw the Cody quote from earlier in the week saying, hey, big red flag anytime a veteran comes in and says, I'm just here for the young guys. So again, that's Chris Jericho being super inside with a promo that he cuts last night, which I'm curious of how many heads that went over. Right. But he was clearly winking and nodding and taking a shot at Cody.
But the idea that he's, I mean, ultimately, without saying it, Jericho wants to work with a lot of young talent. And how's that worked out? From a one-loss record standpoint, how's that worked out?
I mean, actually, Andretti beat him, and look at where he is now.
Exactly.
Somewhere. He shows up once in a while.
Had a match with Leo on Rampage.
Yeah, and they're sort of friendly, but they're not friendly. But yeah,
God bless you for still watching Rampage. God bless you.
Oh, there's a good match. Like, wait, we're gonna get to it. But Willow—they put Willow versus Deeb on Rampage this week. Like, I was gonna watch that. It's a good match.
This is why this show works, man.
Plus, again, like Matt Menard's my guy, and I think he's fantastic on commentary. Like, I'm gonna support friend of the show, Daddy Magic.
No, I understand. I just that's something. That's it. God bless you.
Yeah, we've all got, you know, hey, we've all got our assignments that we take on this show. Certainly,
that's certainly true. I get the tail end of it sometimes. Whatever needed, whatever keeps this show afloat, I have no problem.
Yeah, we keep on rolling through. Brian, what do you got at number two this week?
Sunday night, Long Island, AEW Forbidden Door takes place, and coincidence or not, the last 2 weeks, AEW Dynamite, their lowest ratings ever in show history. Does it make sense for AEW to keep doing Forbidden Door?
Now, again, from a rating standpoint, maybe not, but Tony Khan also said this week that he thinks that they're in the red zone of closing in on a television deal with Warner Brothers Discovery. So as long as they get that TV deal and everybody seems okay with the ratings, I don't care. I think they need to keep the relationship, and if that means doing Forbidden Door, sure. But with WWE showing that they're willing to work with a number of different companies, whether that is in Japan, whether that is Impact, TNA, whatever we're calling it these days, like if you drop your affiliation and don't have that working relationship with New Japan, Hunter's going to move right in. Like, Hunter's going to set something up with New Japan, and he is going to take that ball and run with it. So I think they need to keep doing Forbidden Door if that's what New Japan Pro Wrestling wants, because I think they need to keep that relationship going to help continue building what they want to do on a worldwide scale.
I think the concept is damn near dead for Forbidden Door. The Forbidden Door concept, Gabe, is, oh my God, I can't believe that this person's in the company. You know who does Forbidden Door well? WWE. Just from that TNA NXT experiment. Even though it's a small scale, it's the third company or the third brand for WWE, just the idea that we get all ego Ethan Page just to step through those doors, it's like, oh, wow, didn't expect to see that, right? Just to see Jordan Grace in NXT, like, okay, no one's watching TNA. We understand that. From a United States standpoint, but the point is people know who Jordan Grace is. Strong, the TNA.
Has the look, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, has everything. On the other side, this actually interrupts the flow of what AEW is doing. I don't mind the concept, but is it really the Forbidden Door if Okada's already there?
Right,
that's the
Okada's
thing.
Okada's there. Jay White's there. Osprey's there. Like,
the mistake they made this year is adding CMLL to it. Like, that was not necessary. I just don't think it was completely necessary to have the CMLL aspect of what Forbidden Door is going to be.
Yeah.
But I think you need to keep the working relationship just because, again, I think it's great for them. And I think it's great for New Japan to have John Moxley showing up in the United States, you know, with the IWGP Heavyweight Championship around his shoulder, right? Or the different times that we've seen the United States champion be in AEW. Like, I think that working relationship works. Maybe you don't need the pay-per-view around it anymore, and you just know that that door's open. Because again, that's the part of Forbidden Door that initially worked when the phrase was coined was you didn't know when it was coming. But now when I know when Forbidden Door is coming and I know all these New Japan guys are going to be coming through, like it loses its luster. But that, I mean, again, we know this pay-per-view is going to deliver. Like Zack Sabre Jr. versus Orange Cassidy is going to be a lot of fun. Like you're going to be getting some good matchups, but you can just randomly do these different matchups and have Zack Sabre Jr. Zack Sabre Jr. could show up for WrestleDream, right? Like he could show up at the beginning of the fall for WrestleDream for a one-off match, and it doesn't have to be completely built around this idea of AEW wrestlers going up against New Japan or CMLL talent.
No, but Brian, it's become the portal. That's what it's become. Yeah. It is. It's just like the it's not Forbidden Door. It's just a door that's open for CMLL and AAA or whomever or New Japan is coming in. See, the thing is that you want to have this where fans are like, oh, my God, I cannot believe that Zack Sabre Jr. is here. But he's always around every now and then.
Like he just randomly pops up on Rampages.
It's not special. And by the way,
you're watching too.
Well, it's not my taste, though, Gabe. What it is is that it's for the audience. It's like when these guys come down, I was watching Collision, and here comes Ultimo Dragon or something like that against Okada, right? Yeah. And it's kind of like, but zero reaction.
Right.
Like, well, who is this guy? Who's this mask guy? Who's this guy from the UK? Like, they don't know.
Who apparently doesn't usually wrestle with the mask, and they made him wrestle with the mask, which is why that ended up being so awkward at the end of it.
But the thing is, if you're telling a story and you bring all these guys in that people don't know, I mean, I understand that AEW is, again, an acquired taste, but the point is that if you have a Forbidden Door, it has to be like, oh, my God. I think WWE did a better job with it just from two people than what Tony Khan has done, bringing a slew of wrestlers that the audience doesn't know.
Yeah, but I think they did a good job the first time. I'm looking at the card the first time around. Like, the main event was Mox versus Tanahashi, which at the moment, it wasn't a good match, but I'm sure it meant a lot for Mox. Jay White, Hangman, Okada, Adam Cole. Like, that's something we could have never expected. Claudio versus Zack Sabre Jr., Ospreay versus Orange, like that made sense. But now that everyone's there, like this should just be a Dynamite or a, hey, we have 3 hours. How about a battle of the belts? Like it doesn't need to be a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Because those guys, and again, like Zack Sabre Jr. showed up at a couple of different events at this time. Like,
right.
So maybe from that aspect, you don't need this pay-per-view, but I do think it is important to maintain the relationship. Like, because again, the second you drop the relationship, Now you've got WWE working with some of the other bigger companies, and I feel that puts you on more of an island and not in a great spot.
But are there even at this point, like New Japan is sort of watered down? Like if you're AEW, who are you missing out if you don't have a relationship with them?
You have CMLL, you got New Japan wrestlers coming in, taking up TV time when you got 50 wrestlers, men and women in the back that are not over and not wrestling.
Right. And like looking at the card, the top two matches Sunday, Swerve versus Ospreay and the TNT ladder match, are all only AEW guys, which means you don't really need Forbidden Door.
And so what is WrestleDream? Is it kind of similar? So you got two of these.
Right.
Because you're honoring the creator of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Right, of course.
Okay. I mean, you can have, I mean, so WWE is locking step with TNA and Marigold because they want to get more women wrestlers internationally into the company. Okay, but that's the kind of way to do it. The Forbidden Door is like, I can't believe this person's on my TV, right? The Forbidden Door was like when we saw Cardona come out of nowhere, right? He just wanted to wrestle Copeland because he's out of nowhere. He goes, what did he say? He goes, I just want to wrestle Edge.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to check.
Makes sense.
That's the oh my God thing. But, you know, or someone from Game Changer, Nick Gage.
Yeah.
Yeah, he came through. Like, he was in that one match out of nowhere. That's more of a like, oh my God. But when you have a slew of these guys, Gabe, it's kind of like, okay, so what about the other, what about your AEW storylines you're trying to push forward? What about that? So.
Yeah. it's been hit or miss, because the first Forbidden Door, while the card was good, it stopped a lot of momentum. Yeah. I feel like Tony learned a big lesson and they did a better job of integrating storylines. But now this year, it's again, I blame more of the CML stuff, just because there are so many professional wrestling. Like if I pay attention to anything happening in Mexico, usually it's Triple A. Right. Like, because there are people that I know that will wrestle there, you know, Rey Fénix and Penta and, you know, people who are involved within AEW that CMLL. Like, sorry, man. Like, I don't know. Like, you have to be so deep in to know who some of these guys are. Even wrestling against Jon Moxley, you're going, who is this?
Right.
Again, so I think that was the big, again, I keep going back to that. I think CMLL adding them was the big mistake this year.
And I think, like, looking at the card, like Sabre Jr. versus Orange, MJF versus Echicero, like Mercedes versus Stephanie Vaquer, I'll admit, like, I don't know who that is. Like, I've seen her on TV the last couple weeks, but I've never seen her wrestle. Yeah. This is one of those shows that, honestly, if it wasn't for Swerve and Ospreay, it might be when I sort of sit out. And I'm like, all right, I can catch stuff after. Like, Swerve and Ospreay is enough to get my money, but it's just like, all right, like, it almost feels like a WWE PLE. Like, it's just filling time. The wrestling will be good, but we're not invested in it.
Yes, the wrestling will be good. You just hit it right there. It's going to be fine. It's just that, again, it's about the investment. You mentioned Stephanie Vaquer, saw her at New Japan in Chicago.
Windy City Riot.
Windy City Riot. I saw her. Very good. She's very good. That match should deliver.
Yeah, I have no doubt that will. I have no doubt Danielson and Shingo will. Like, not that I'm that familiar with him. Like, the MJF one will be interesting. We know Sabre Jr. and Orange will be good. But then we move on to next week, and it's, hey, Daniel Garcia is waiting for Ospreay.
I mean, this is when you know it's not working, when you get MJF. Again, maybe your highest paid guy, you know, who's in free agency, he's back, and you get him in a matchup against Hechicero. What?
Yeah.
What is that?
I don't know.
What is that? That sounds like the opener. What it sounds like.
I don't
Without
know.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Really? That's opening the show. Yes. MJF is opening the show. It feels like MJF is almost in Brock Lesnar territory. If MJF ain't closing the show, he is opening the show.
That's fair, but I feel like they put so much into, like, the opening match is just as good as the main event. And when you have Sabre Jr., you have Danielson on there, like, you have Mox defending the IWGP title.
I mean, I just think that Hechicero is just underwater. Like, he's been on the show. He's been on their TV, what, a couple weeks? Uh-huh. He's not a character. He's just a guy.
He's a guy.
I don't get it. I don't. But again, they'll turn the page on this, and then again focus on, you know, their show at Wembley, and it'll be fine. But just, I always think that this is in the way. This feels like it should be an October pay per view. Put it against the World Series, so we can forget about it.
That's what WrestleDream is.
Yeah. But WrestleDream or Forbidden Door. WrestleDream or Forbidden Door. One of them has to go.
Yes. I think that would make things a lot better.
So I think that's fair. All that is fair. I'm as you just said, Brian, I'm just interested in the main event and see how that works for the world title.
And Wembley is next, and they're going to have a good amount of build to that, August 25th. So you're going to have 2 full months to build towards Wembley, which will be good.
Guys will start getting healthy. Maybe a Britt Baker return. We start getting some of the wrestlers we haven't seen in a while, which is going to be great. You got time to heal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I cannot wait for Britt Baker to return. I hope that really kicks things into another gear with this women's division. What do we got at number 3, Brian?
All right, a couple big anniversaries this week. June 25th of 2002. That was the debut of Ruthless Aggression. John Cena's SmackDown debut, squaring up with Kurt Angle. June 27th, 2011. CM Punk pipe bomb. What's a bigger moment in wrestling history? Cena's SmackDown debut or Punk's pipe bomb?
To me, this isn't even close. And it's the pipe bomb. Like, it's not even close. Like, Cena debuting, if that led to something, sure. But the John Cena character, even if you want to go to, you know, Thug Life John Cena, right? Like, that's nothing what that John Cena who said Ruthless Aggression and had whatever shorts he was wearing. Like, that John Cena almost was almost fired And like he openly talks about like that was a great moment for him, but then it spiraled. It's almost similar to the Jericho debut, where Jericho had such a great debut in WWE, going Mike, you know, with The Rock, he's sharing the stage. And then he kind of went away almost for 6 months, where like he couldn't find his footing. Cena couldn't find his footing, and then eventually was able to build back up. So that's Cena. While at times I feel WWE, especially when they did their Ruthless Aggression like documentary series or whatever, like try to point to that as like some big moment. You're like, yeah, it was Cena's debut, but it didn't lead to anything. The CM, yeah, look at that guy. That is nothing like the John Cena. Like that's an American gladiator. That's what that is right there. That's an American gladiator. The CM Punk pipe bomb led to what professional wrestling is today. Like without the CM Punk pipe bomb, AEW does not exist. The creators of AEW have openly admitted that, even though some of those creators hate CM Punk's guts now. Like CM Punk has also mentioned how, and he mentioned this in the post press at I think it was at Clash of the Castle, of how there are some in WWE that feel like him and what he did have led to what the locker room is like now in WWE. Like the CM Punk pipe bomb led to legitimate changes within the professional wrestling industry. Whereas, again, Cena's one of the greatest of all time. And if that Ruthless Aggression promo launched it, maybe it's got a chance. But that didn't really launch John Cena. The pipe bomb launched a number of different things within professional wrestling.
It was a pop culture moment, because now it just went across wrestling and it went to other places. Like, if I'm going to say something unbelievable, it's a pipe bomb. So it became a culture, it kind of like NWO and like some of these other things that supersede wrestling. It got into the bloodstream of people's wanting to say, hey man, when I go off on someone, it's going to be a pipe bomb. That's where it started. And also during this time where WWE is kind of flat, here is CM Punk saying something that felt shootish to us. Like, oh my God, are you really saying this? Do they understand that this is an open microphone? Like, we haven't heard someone speak like that before. And so I think that resonates a lot more. With John Cena, I showed you the picture. The guy had trunks on, and he comes in the ring, and he says, Ruthless Aggression. He slaps Kurt Angle. It's kind of like, okay.
And then beats him on a roll-up, right? Like, yeah. You didn't know. In the moment, you're like, okay, maybe this is something. Watching the pipe bomb live when it was on, you knew that was something.
Yes. And it somehow, again, evolves John Cena. But wrestling trunks John Cena was the beginning, sure. But this is the WWE saying it's the beginning. Remember this, Brian. Remember, they write the history.
Of course.
This could have been like Shawn Michaels or Triple H, but WWE loves to write the history. It started here, pal, and then from there. It was Cena with the slap and the Ruthless Aggression. It was just an attitude that WWE needed because they were flat. After they bought WCW, it was unwatchable.
Right.
So they had to do something. So that's what they did.
And to that point, WWE was unwatchable before the Punk moment. Like, it was bad. And that's why you had those moments and you got that. And yes, that led to a lot. And you mentioned it being shootish. And I think that's why when Brawl Out happened, we saw so many clips from him and Hunter going back and forth over the next few months where it's like, hey, maybe this was real. Like, maybe this is who Punk is and, you know, how he treats authority. The only thing I would say with Cena, though, is like, there's still something to it being that first moment. Like, you had the backstage with Taker. Like, I believe that was the same night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, he shakes his hand in the back. So, like, while it took a while to get going, like, it's quite a career that you got going after that.
Sure. But, again, like, it's like retrospective, right?
Sure.
Like, it's because as Hood said, like, because WWE writes the history. So now they write the history of this is when John Cena started. And usually that history includes, oh, he said Ruthless Aggression into a microphone, slapped Kurt Angle, and then became world champion 2 weeks later. Like, that's what it feels like, the history when WWE tries to tell it, when that's not the history at all. Like, that's, you know.
That is fair, but at least he was there. Like, he didn't go away. He was there for a little bit. Like, it was a thing. It just took a while to get going.
Sure.
It's like anything else, guys. It was Ruthless Aggression started with Vince McMahon because it's something he would say. The story of Vince McMahon and Ruthless Aggression is, God damn it, these guys, they're scared. They're scared of their own shadow. I need guys with ruthless aggression. You think that came out from Cena naturally? Are you kidding me? So that era for we're talking about the Ruthless Aggression roster. Cena, Guerrero, Randy Orton, Batista, Brock Lesnar, Shelton Benjamin, The Undertaker, Big Show, JBL, Kane, Mick Foley, Paul London. Rest in- I love Paul London. I loved him, but they hated him there because he's such a weirdo. Uh-huh. Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Amy Weber, Booker T, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, Chris Masters, Edge, Matt Morgan, Rey Mysterio. Hogan also part of that toward that toward the end. But it was kind of like the younger core, veteran younger core that pushed that through. But it was like there was so many young guys, like a Chris Masters, they were like, Vince was like, what's wrong with you, man? It's not like the Austin crew, right? The Austin and Rock crew. When they didn't care what Vince said, like, I'm going out there and I'm gonna do it. And it was a different deal.
With the Cena promo, like, again, he kind of goes away, but then you get the SmackDown 6. You get the Paul Heyman writing SmackDown, right? Like, it grows to other things, but it's not like – I don't look at Cena going Ruthless Aggression. I feel like at times WWE wants me to believe that's like when Austin stood there and said – Austin 316 said, I just whooped your ass. It's not even close. Like, it's just not even close. One of those actually meant something. The other was – okay, maybe there's something here. And they tried to push him and it didn't end up working for a while. Like, he had to change his character. Like, that character of Cena never got over.
Yeah, that's fair. But, like, it still is that first, like, real moment. Like, this isn't a random, like, hey, remember when this guy worked a dark match and then, you know, turned into John Cena? Like, it's him and Kurt Angle. It's him and Taker. It's still a big moment.
And the Brian Kendrick, also part of that.
Of course, yes.
Also, I loved him too.
but this was like this close, which is crazy to think about in the career that Cena had. Like, this was this close to Chris Jericho versus Fandango, right? Yes. Yeah. That's how close it was, right? That was certainly a moment, right? Fandango had a moment in WWE. He beats Chris Jericho at WrestleMania and it doesn't go anywhere. Like, that's what happened here with Cena, and he had to change something else in order to get himself over.
I'm sensing a Chris Jericho to then get guys over trend.
Just you now?
Think? you think? Out there. You think? I'll say this about CM Punk, too. And I don't know what's real and what's not, guys, when it comes to Triple H. Has he mellowed out more that he doesn't wrestle anymore and he's more, and because it's his company? I don't know the answer to that. But I just know during that time, since we're talking about the pipe bomb era, I think a lot of people in WWE, including Vince, looked at CM Punk and said, oh, this indie-rific jerk. Like, this, we're handing him the WWE championship. And he, of course, he was champion but was never the guy. There was a number of guys like that. But they were like, okay, for the indie crowd, here you go. I don't think that it was – I don't think the WWE understood the value of CM Punk or wrestlers of that ilk. So this is when I think that when Punk left, I think that Triple H realized, like, you know what? These guys have some steam. They've got something to them. They've got some juice. And that's why NXT was so good. He kept bringing in indie guys, and there was a little bit – they were rough around the edge. They weren't the WWE recycled kind of wrestlers. It wasn't WWE-branded wrestlers. It's guys that's been on the indies for 10 years. So I think that after CM Punk was bitching about the way WWE is doing business and they couldn't get along – I think it clicked for Triple H, and he goes, you know what? I miss CM Punk. I miss that attitude. So let's bring in Kevin Owens, and let's bring in all these other guys that were in the indies and put them on this platform and see what happens. And a lot of those guys remain because of Triple H understanding, you know what? CM Punk was right, but I couldn't listen to him because he was an indie guy. Who cares? But now I think he gets it.
Well, I'm curious to play the what-if game. Like, if the pipe bomb bombs and doesn't work out and isn't as over as it is, do guys like KO, do guys like Brian, Sammy, Rollins, like, do those guys ever get a fair shot in the WWE?
I am very comfortable in saying, without CM Punk, and maybe without, if CM Punk doesn't leave the company in which he does, we never get Daniel Bryan. Like, he's still a tremendous wrestler, but we never get Daniel Bryan, WrestleMania, him being as over as he was, becoming the planet. Like, his career is totally different. Totally different.
Yeah. From Vince's standpoint, and he did this with a number of wrestlers, I would say that he did this with Kofi Kingston. He did this with Rey Mysterio, Chris Benoit, CM Punk. Here's the, or Bray Wyatt. Here's the WWE Championship, but you'll never be the guy because you're the fans' champion, and we're just going to ride with you, see if the belt can make you. And so, but I'm glad that CM Punk did make his run because Gabe is correct. You know, when I have CM Punk, some of these guys that were underachievers or middle card guys wouldn't be at the top, wouldn't have a chance at the title and to be able to run with it.
Yeah. So again, I don't think it's particularly close. I think it's the pipe bomb because it led to a lot of different things. Like without the pipe bomb, we don't have Cody Rhodes.
No, we have Stardust. That's it. Because there's nowhere else for Cody to go. Like, yes, maybe he still wins the NWA title, Ring of Honor, maybe it's still a thing, but yeah, there's no AEW.
It's true. It's absolutely true. And all the tentacles connect to Vince, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
All of it. All of it connects to WWE or Vince. So.
Insane.
What do we got news and notes this week, Brian?
All right, WWE making a historic announcement this week with Indianapolis. WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and the Royal Rumble will all be coming to Indy in the future. It'll start with the 2025 Rumble. Then it'll feature two-night Mania and a two-night SummerSlam TBD.
I guess I'm a little surprised that they decided to do WrestleMania there just because it seemed like after doing a cold WrestleMania in Philly that they didn't want to do that again, although maybe it being inside. Look, I've been to Indy for Final Fours. Indy's such a great event town. Like, this makes perfect sense because everything is right there. Like, all the hotels that you could possibly need, right there. Everything is within walking distance. Everything is super connected. I think it's going to be really easy for WrestleMania weekend for all the other promotions that come in and run shows. Like, I think it's going to be fantastic. This just makes total sense because they've been able to host every other big sporting event in this country.
How about that, Gabe? We get our Midwestern events, but we get more than one. So this is drivable.
We're going. Oh, yeah.
This is 3 hours or less, 2.5 hours. This is great. And boy, do we have the money amount? Brian, how much this cost?
I have not seen that.
Holy cow, they have all these events. It just shows you how far the WWE's come. The states are saying, and these cities are saying, we'll pay you. Just come here because the financial windfall will be tremendous for our economy to have not just one event, multiple events, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam. And I know people think, oh, boring, you know, it's Naptown, it's Indianapolis. Well, you know what? It's a clean city. And as Gabe said, I've covered Final Fours there before, been Pacer games, all that. Everything is together. Everything is right there in the middle of the city. I've already mapped out a couple of hotels. I already have a favorite hotel from the last year's combine from Indianapolis. So I know exactly where I'm staying. So I think it's going to be great for the show. It's Midwest.
Yeah, but why not two night Rumble and one night SummerSlam?
Because it's not AEW.
We don't need two nights of SummerSlam. The Rumble, having a Rumble each night.
We don't need a two night Rumble either. Like, because the Rumble,
two night SummerSlam though.
Yeah, look, I mean, but the Rumble's pretty clean, and they found a way to be efficient with it. It's like the two Rumbles. You have one kick off the show, a couple matches in between, have another Rumble. Good night, everybody. Like expanding that and spreading out the Rumbles. No, thank you. I'm good with one night Rumble.
Well, here's some more Rumble news. Bianca Belair talking to Comic Book Nation says, since everyone's already asking, Caitlin Clark should be a part of the Rumble in Indy. We've also heard Pacer star Tyrese Halliburton asking if he can be in.
I mean, she's the one who's been taking the shots, so I guess we know she can take a punch, but wouldn't somebody like Angel Reese be, you know, wouldn't she be more intimidating and more of a threat to throw some people over the top rope as physical as she's been?
She is. She's been a professional wrestler since LSU.
Yeah. Like, she gets it, man. She gets it. She knows when to lean in, man. She gets it.
I think it's more along the lines of Halliburton finding his way into WWE, doing something physical, more so than Caitlin Clark. I don't see her being part of this. She's seems like a really a good egg that would not involve herself in this physically.
That's more headlines, though. There are more headlines if Clark's in the Rumble than Halliburton is.
I'm just telling you, like, he was already there in Raw, so I feel like he's going to be doing something.
Like her running out and then getting dumped over the top rope by like Nia, like those are headlines. Or Angel Reese distracts her and then she gets knocked out. I mean, come on.
I don't know. Maybe Mike Woodson can enter the Royal Rumble. Throw him over the top rope. The Indiana coach. Throw him over the top. I think that'll work. Maybe Dokic comes in as a manager. Dan Dok. Well, maybe he could do that. Just say it. He could come in and out kick his coverage.
Some more to add to your viewing schedule. We finally have a release date for the WrestleMania 40 Behind the Scenes documentary. It'll be released on Peacock Wednesday, July 3rd. It was originally announced as the Wednesday after Mania. They announced that the night of night two of WrestleMania. Push back a little bit. So Wednesday, July 3rd, that Behind the Scenes documentary.
Look, I'm okay with it being a little bit delayed because WWE has put together a reputation of having the documentaries that they do really well produced. I've never produced a documentary. I'm guessing it takes more time than 3 days, right? Like maybe they just got a little too aggressive with the first release and decided, hey, why don't we? And then once they delayed it a little bit, they're like, what are we doing? Let's just take our time and make sure we put this thing together and do it the right way. So yes, probably saying this is coming out on Wednesday was a mistake. I'm expecting something that is really, really well produced. And if not, then they just wasted all of our time.
Brian, let me know how it goes. I'm not watching it.
Not watching? No?
Absolutely not.
But they're telling a history. This is what happened in real time. They're changing up the main event.
Let me know how it goes. I can't trust a lot of WWE documentaries because, again, it's the way they tell the story. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. They have a WWE wrestler in Dwayne The Rock Johnson that tried to tell a story of who saved WCW, and even that was screwed up because it was just a nice shine-up piece for Eric Bischoff as he looks out to the mountains of Wyoming. It wasn't my fault. It was Time Warner. Screw off.
I watched the first episode only of that, and all I've seen in terms of feedback is that it's not worth watching.
No, I mean, I had to watch it just so I could poke holes in it. It's just, but again, it's really, I mean, it's Danny Garcia, not Danny Garcia. It's The Rock's wife and The Rock and their production company. And they, there's a lot of holes in that story. They should have had a news person like a Meltzer or a Wade Keller to kind of tell their part of the story. And that's just like a WWE documentary. It's the way they tell the story. So,
again, it's if you ever watch the Kurt Angle documentary, like the way that they kind of mess the way they kind of mess with like his timeline and the time he was in TNA and then coming back to WWE, like they just mess with the timeline because again, they're WWE, they're the ones telling the story. So this is what we're going to do.
I can learn more about WWE in shoot interviews with a guy with a bottle of Jack right there on the table telling the real story than a WWE documentary.
Is this the last WCW one? I feel like we've seen this enough, the Who Killed WCW.
I can't imagine how – I mean, they've all been the same, right?
Yes.
Like, how much different – this was like when, Dark Side of the Ring did, like, their Vince episode, and it was just, like, from all the other episodes, like, there was nothing new. It's just like, oh, you're just kind of splicing it. This is like best of Dark Side of the Ring. Like, that's what I felt watching the first couple of episodes of this one. Like, haven't I already seen Monday Night Wars on WWE Network? Right. And they did a different WCW one on WWE Network. Like, I feel I've seen all of this before. Just Kevin Nash is older now.
This was better. I got a chance to see Ted Turner's son. I thought that was cool. I want to hang with that guy. He's got stories.
Okay.
I like Ted Turner's son. And then you get, you've got people from behind the scenes who never spoke on the record for this. Stu Snyder's on there lying. It's just like all that stuff. So they
got new people. They're just not telling the truth.
Yeah, but people I haven't seen before. Like that was in WCW. And I'm just like, okay, pretty good. But the bottom line is, as you've heard me rant about this before, Eric Bischoff killed WCW and Vince Russo buried it. That's what happened. All the excuses about how TNT and TBS, they did not want wrestling and all that stuff, or them complaining that they didn't want us to have a second show in Thunder. It's so dumb to me. Just like, well, here's the thing that a wrestling promoter wants. Less wrestling, right? We have Nitro. Please don't give us that Thunder. Please. Let's not have a second show. You don't? So you don't want to compete against SmackDown on the other channel on Thursday nights. You're an idiot. They had no ideas. They had no fresh ideas beyond Goldberg and the NWO. That's all they had.
I will say the Death of WCW book, I believe Alvarez helped write it. One of the most entertaining books I've ever read. Going through some of the week-by-week booking and just poking holes and things like that. A lot of fun.
Shout out to UPN and SmackDown, by the way. UPN, home of the first home of SmackDown.
You son of a bitch, Triple H! Why? Why, Triple H? Why? Run over to the Wayans brothers.
There you go. Finally, news and notes. Conflicting reports out on Ricky Starks and his current size with AEW. Fightful says he has turned down some potential stories, which has led to him currently being home.
Yeah, I mean, so the initial stories that he was turning down all creative. Now it's only he turned down some creative. Like, you... who do you think you are that you're just turning down creative, man? Like, you don't want to be on TV? Like, you think you're going to be a guy in WWE? No, you're going to get lost in the shuffle over there too, man. Like, if you're a professional wrestler, you need to be on television. And just sitting at home, not wanting to do the creative, like, I don't think that's a good look.
He'll be in NXT at the end of the year.
100%.
Is he going to do anything in NXT?
No, it'll just be him. I mean, it'll be, holy shit, here comes Ricky Starks. But, I mean, you know he's talented. But when you're into WWE, you have to check the attitude at the door, or you just won't be there.
Spears is in the main event picture of NXT right now, so I think Ricky will do okay there.
He'll be fine, but you check the attitude, because the attitude's changed. You can't come in WWE like that.
Is Ricky that good, though?
I think so.
He cut one good promo, and I feel like he's been living off that reputation.
But the MJF stuff was good. The Bryan stuff was really good. Like, we've seen him at his best.
He is good. Okay, but which promo are you talking about? Against Copeland?
No, his promo that led to him going up against MJF.
Oh, yes. The thing that killed Ricky Starks is the promo against Copeland. That killed him dead. Like, as soon as, when he was going back and forth and smarting off with Copeland, that was the beginning of the end.
Well, circling back, would you rather have Starks or Garcia?
I think there's more money in Ricky Starks. It is?
Yeah, I guess there's probably more money in Ricky Starks, but I think they're closer. I don't think it's that far. Starks does. I think Danny Garcia is better in the ring. But Starks is more of a personality. Like, Starks could probably get me to care more. Like, Starks certainly got me to care more than I think Daniel Garcia has ever gotten me to care about him.
That's fair. Yeah.
If you have a problem with him, then that's good, because he got you from a personality standpoint. Well, how does Daniel Garcia make you feel when you watch him? See?
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, I have cared about Ricky Starks before. Like, again, yes, it didn't last very long, but I have cared about him. Versus Daniel Garcia.
He squared up with the Dragon. I mean, come on. He had the big moment with Steamboat.
Yeah.
Wasn't that Chicago?
Hey, listen, it's not his fault. I don't like the attitude, but I also don't like the creative around him. We said at the time, him and Big Bill as tag team champions made no sense. Yeah. Zero sense. That didn't do anything for either one of those guys. And Big Bill still is a go-behind. Now he's behind Chris Jericho. It's like, dude, he's 7 foot tall, and you can't teach that.
That's what I've heard.
What did you guys have as your matches of the week?
Will Ospreay against Brian Cage on Collision.
That Brian Cage guy's good.
That's somebody who needs to go to WWE. Like, that's somebody, like, for the love of God, can somebody rescue this man? Can somebody give this man a victory? Look, and he's not going to beat Ospreay, right? But, like, just give him, put him on TV and let him beat somebody good.
But imagine how much better that match would have been if there was even a slight thought that he would beat Ospreay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he just continues to be, like, thrown in these big matches, delivers in said matches, but then just loses every single one of them. Like, I know what's going to happen anytime I see Brian Cage on my television. He's going to be looking up the lights as his shoulders are pinned to the mat.
I can send you, Brian, a link of Brian Cage against Will Ospreay. From South Bend, Indiana.
Okay.
Indie show. That was better than that match, if you could believe it. So these two know each other. So that's why it was smooth. But, I mean, Brian Cage, yeah, someone's got to be NXT champion. The reason why I do that joke, the reason why I did that joke is if Vince was in charge, Brian Cage would be on the main roster. I don't know if that really works that way for Triple H now because Vince loved the monsters. I'm just saying, like, today.
I don't know. He's doing a hell of a job with Bron Breakker right now.
I said monsters.
That's what Bron's being.
I mean physical, like strong, like big monsters. I mean big guys. No, but I'm just saying Vince was a big – he loved big guys.
I mean Brian Cage is a proto – like if Vince McMahon were to create a wrestler, it would be Brian Cage.
Yes.
I agree. 100%.
With less flippy stuff though. He would take that out. Don't Gabe, flip your big.
Gabe, bring your wife in to a match with Brian Cage and say, hon, what do you think of this? And she'll say, is that not the world champion?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That man has not won a televised match in 322 days.
That is fair.
Unbelievable.
I threw on, as long as we're going to talk about Ospreay and Swerve last night, they put on a show in the main event. The tag team match was great. I love how it ended, too, with Swerve hitting, you know, kind of turning, I guess not really turning on Ospreay, but being the last one to be standing at the end of Dynamite. I thought the tag match was very good last night.
I enjoyed last night Sabre Jr. and Kyle O'Reilly. Speaking of guys that are, you know, just there in AEW, Kyle O'Reilly, hello?
Orange Cassidy going, these guys are doing moves. I don't even know what they are.
Also, Orange, Big Pop for Orange revealing to Taz that Orange is his legal first name. His mother gave it to him. Because Taz tried telling him to drop the Orange, that it was gimmick infringement.
I liked him when he was quiet.
Well, all of his friends left him. Like, nobody else. He's got to do the talking. All of his friends, other than Ishii, have left him, apparently.
Now he's just glib and unfunny. That's what he is.
I did have... Bianca Belair versus Meechan versus our girl Chelsea. I thought that match was a lot of fun on SmackDown. And then, of course, our girl Chelsea going over as she predicted right here on GKW last week.
That did happen right here.
I was watching that live. I leapt up from my couch when she threw Bianca out of the ring. I was so pumped for Chelsea Green. So excited. She's going to be over in Toronto. I can't wait for it.
The motherland, as she said.
Happy for Andrade, Grayson Waller, and Kevin Owens in the qualifying match. Thought that was very, very solid. Great story told there.
So, see, I had another qualifying match. I had the Lyra, Kyrie, and Shayna for Monday.
Yeah. Well, again, so the thing with Lyra, like, we know she can go in the ring. But much like we were just talking about and criticizing most of the show, Daniel Garcia, she needs to make me care more. Make me care now. I know you can go. Now you've got to get me to buy in to something. And that's the one thing that she's made. She's young, and I'm sure they'll figure something out. But they keep giving her this push, and I just have no reason to care about her or a reason to invest to, okay, she wins Money in the Bank. Should I be excited about that? Am I not excited about that? Like, that's just kind of where she is right now. I'm not invested in her as a character.
The other thing I'll throw out from SmackDown also is just Drew and Punk continue to deliver. Like, a good awesome job.
So Punk is going to cost Drew at Money in the Bank again, right? That's how we're going to set up SummerSlam now? Because we thought that Punk was going to maybe be in, because we assumed, and then he did not announce that he was cleared on Friday in Chicago. So to get to SummerSlam, I think Punk has to cost him again. And if Drew's climbing the ladder and Punk costs him, that's what gets us to SummerSlam.
WWE's doing some great storytelling, you know, Liv Morgan and Dom and what's happening with the Bloodline. But this thing here, man, this has to deliver. And this can't be a one-off either. That's why I'm hoping that CM Punk can keep his body together so this could be more than one time. The detail from Friday night, guys, the detail from Chicago where let me ask you, Brian, have you been to Allstate Arena? Have you been there in Rosemont?
Where was I for Collision in Chicago? I don't remember where I went.
They don't go to Allstate because that's WWE land.
I know that building like the – go ahead.
Oh, I can't believe they hosted a WrestleMania in that building.
Hey, man, that those are the lean times, right?
Like, that was the first time I was ever in that building was for a Raw. I think it was like back in 15 or 16 when Brock Lesnar tore apart whatever car was like given. It was gifted to Seth Rollins, and he almost like took out a member of the audience because he ripped the door off the car and then like, just like discused it almost into the stands. The entire time I was there, I'm like, they did a Mania in this building, which was just so hard for me to comprehend.
Hey, man, listen, I mean, it's Stone Cold Steve Austin's favorite building. It is because of how the sound holds in that place. It's crazy
how the roof,
because of the wooden roof up top.
Yep, that's a barn.
Austin loved that building because he couldn't hear himself. Because during that time, that building held the sound in. I was going to say, I know that building like the back of my hand, and I know where that garage door was. The garage door opens, and you see CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. I was just going to just give WWE their flowers about the detail. Do you notice the knuckles on Drew McIntyre? Like he beat the crap out of CM Punk. There was blood here and there's blood here on the knuckles. There were scrapes on his arm like there was a struggle. And then he dumped his carcass right there on the stage. I just thought those little things, that's just a little detail of, hey, something went on here where Drew McIntyre got a hold of CM Punk. And I just thought that was a nice touch.
Well, but that's honestly been kind of a hallmark of the Triple H era.
Right.
Of him, you know, whether it's, you know, whether it's Rhea Ripley, like talking to somebody in the background of, well, this story's happening here, but that doesn't mean that story's stopping. So it's kind of having to pay attention to everything. And I think that's kind of been a hallmark of the Triple H era for sure.
Even some of the stuff like Pierce coming out and like pushing Drew and being pissed off that like that happened, like to see that sort of emotion, that dynamic, like they're doing one hell of a job with this story.
Yeah, just really, really good stuff that they're doing right now. And again, it's going to lead into something, but Drew McIntyre and CM Punk, when that happens, hopefully both guys can stay healthy, especially Punk, because I need more. Like, let's say actually fight. This feels already like Hell in the Cell, but you got to get through the first match first before you get no disqualification, and then you let this thing keep bubbling because it's pretty strong.
Punk doesn't want you booking that, didn't you hear?
Well, he doesn't want you to book it right away. He doesn't want you to book it as the first match.
Yes. At some point, yes.
Yeah, at some point, Hell in a Cell. Or, I mean, when's the last time WWE did a bull rope match? Because CM Punk had a hell of one of those in AEW. Like, he could try to run that back.
Yeah.
Do want to mention, again, because I did watch Rampage, but Willow versus Serena Deeb, not shocking. That was a good match.
God bless you and your ministry. Rampage.
Just, you know, hey, it was an opening round match for the Owen Hart on the women's side.
Cool.
You knew it would deliver, that's for sure.
Yeah. Disappointed. I really thought when they announced it, I thought that Ray versus Jay White would be on the list this week, and that was kind of disappointing yesterday.
Yeah. It was underwhelming, but I don't know why.
I think it kind of went quick too. Like, I feel like I was just settling in, maybe, and then it's like, oh, he just hit Blade Runner. I guess this is over.
Yeah, like, when they went three, I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's it.
Yeah. Okay, well, move on. See what we got coming up next.
Hey, I, you know what? It's okay for us to give Bron Breakker and Ludwig Kaiser its flowers. You may not like the finish. Again, this is twice in a row.
That's happened to Breakker now.
But the match is solid, though, within the first... You know, it's just the way it is. I tell you one thing. Triple H loves his disqualification matches.
Yes, he does. And I think Ludwig got hurt in it. There were reports that it was a legit injury in that match.
Oh, he's too dangerous. Bron Breakker. It's great.
If you are listening to this on the podcast or happy to check it out on social media, check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. A lot of great content on there outside of the podcasts as well. Comment, subscribe, check us out. We're going to be here each and every Thursday for GKW. We're going to be here next week. It's going to be a short week, so the episode probably not going to come out on Thursday because that is the holiday. That is July 4th, but we're going to have something reacting to Forbidden Door, reacting to Monday Night Raw, reacting to all the great things happening in professional wrestling right here next week on GKW.